Task 2. Listen to the recording for text 1.
On his 30th birthday, Dan McLaughlin decided to become a professional golfer. He wanted to test a theory he'd read about in the Malcolm Gladwell bestseller Outliers. Based on research suggesting that practice is the essence of genius, Gladwell popularized the idea that regardless of a person's natural aptitude, 10,000 hours of deliberate and appropriately guided practice was the magic number of greatness. He claimed that with this amount of practice, anyone could achieve a level of proficiency that would rival that of a professional. The idea appealed to Dan, who set himself the goal of developing his skills well enough to make his appearance in the Professional Golfers Association Tour. First, Dan spoke to Dr. Erickson, the original researcher behind the 10,000 hours rule. Dan intended to practice for 10 hours a day, 6 days a week, and get to the 10,000 mark in 3.5 years. But after discussing concentration levels and learning absorption with Dr. Erickson, they agreed it had to be a much longer project. A typical day would be between 4 and 6 hours of practice literally standing over a ball, followed by a handful of extracurricular activities such as working out, watching training videos, and meditation. The days would be long, but only the time spent literally working with the ball would count towards the 10,000 hours. With over 60 million golfers in the world, qualifying for the PGA Tour might seem like climbing Mount Everest in flip-flops. Many professionals share this view and argue that the do-it-yourself routine will never let you reach the level required to compete with Tiger Woods, certainly not at Dan's age. Undeterred by such opinions, Dan is pursuing his path single-mindedly. He sticks to deliberate practice, which means isolating specific aspects of a larger task and focusing on them until they are improved. This way, he aims to prove what some instructors suggest, namely that such practice could be more effective than repeating the whole task over and over, in order to improve overall performance. Dan has already clocked up over 6,000 hours, and he is meticulously tracking his progress on his website, which has attracted a steadily swelling crowd of intrigued followers. Dan is enjoying the challenge he took on. "What guy wouldn't want to go out and practice golf for 9 years?" he says jokingly.
Listen to the recording once again.
On his 30th birthday, Dan McLaughlin decided to become a professional golfer. He wanted to test a theory he'd read about in the Malcolm Gladwell bestseller Outliers. Based on research suggesting that practice is the essence of genius, Gladwell popularized the idea that regardless of a person's natural aptitude, 10,000 hours of deliberate and appropriately guided practice was the magic number of greatness. He claimed that with this amount of practice, anyone could achieve a level of proficiency that would rival that of a professional. The idea appealed to Dan, who set himself the goal of developing his skills well enough to make his appearance in the Professional Golfers Association Tour. First, Dan spoke to Dr. Erickson, the original researcher behind the 10,000 hours rule. Dan intended to practice for 10 hours a day, 6 days a week, and get to the 10,000 mark in 3.5 years. But after discussing concentration levels and learning absorption with Dr. Erickson, they agreed it had to be a much longer project. A typical day would be between 4 and 6 hours of practice literally standing over a ball, followed by a handful of extracurricular activities such as working out, watching training videos, and meditation. The days would be long, but only the time spent literally working with the ball would count towards the 10,000 hours. With over 60 million golfers in the world, qualifying for the PGA Tour might seem like climbing Mount Everest in flip-flops. Many professionals share this view and argue that the do-it-yourself routine will never let you reach the level required to compete with Tiger Woods, certainly not at Dan's age. Undeterred by such opinions, Dan is pursuing his path single-mindedly. He sticks to deliberate practice, which means isolating specific aspects of a larger task and focusing on them until they are improved. This way, he aims to prove what some instructors suggest, namely that such practice could be more effective than repeating the whole task over and over, in order to improve overall performance. Dan has already clocked up over 6,000 hours, and he is meticulously tracking his progress on his website, which has attracted a steadily swelling crowd of intrigued followers. Dan is enjoying the challenge he took on. "What guy wouldn't want to go out and practice golf for 9 years?" he says jokingly.
Read the questions for text 2. Listen to the recording for text 2.
Do you think it's possible to capture the world in a drop of water? Our guest, Marcus, who specialises in water drop photographs, has proved that it is. Marcus, why did you opt for water-based high-speed photography?
When I bought my first camera a few years ago, I just wanted to take good family pictures. But then I started to read about camera settings and lighting, and one day while browsing different websites, I came across amazing high-speed pictures of water drops. These images gave rise to my own experiments in the genre, and after a couple of trial-and-error attempts, I got so immersed that I didn't feel like doing anything else.
Your most famous image is that of the planet Earth visible in a drop of water. But you also create unforgettable images of water droplets by themselves. How do you produce them?
Most of them were taken using the so-called drop-on-drop technique. It works with two drops. When the first drop falls into the water, initially it forms a crater, then a crown, and finally a pillar. The second drop must be timed in such a way that it lands on the pillar. At the moment of collision, different shapes are formed, for example, mushrooms, hats, or flying discs. When I increase the distance between the first and the second drop, the shape turns into a flying disc. When I make the distance smaller, the shape resembles something like a hat.
You must be very quick to take a shot at the right moment.
It's impossible to be that quick. Normally, I thicken my water with some transparent substance like guar gum to make the shapes hold longer before they collapse. The liquid should have the consistency of milk or cream.
And the last question. Some people say that quality water drop pictures are only possible when you use an automatic timing device. Do you agree?
I wouldn't say so. I know many people using highly specialised gear who still produce photos below standard. Gadgets won't do the trick. The genre I have chosen requires mainly one thing, a lot of patience. The shapes cannot be calculated. The only way to get the desired result is to adjust the settings and keep releasing the droplets until you get the perfect image. That usually means taking about 100 shots. But for me, that's the fun of it.
Listen to the recording once again.
Do you think it's possible to capture the world in a drop of water? Our guest, Marcus, who specializes in water drop photographs, has proved that it is. Marcus, why did you opt for water-based high-speed photography?
When I bought my first camera a few years ago, I just wanted to take good family pictures. But then I started to read about camera settings and lighting, and one day while browsing different websites, I came across amazing high-speed pictures of water drops. These images gave rise to my own experiments in the genre, and after a couple of trial-and-error attempts, I got so immersed that I didn't feel like doing anything else.
Your most famous image is that of the planet Earth visible in a drop of water. But you also create unforgettable images of water droplets by themselves. How do you produce them?
Most of them were taken using the so-called drop-on-drop technique. It works with two drops. When the first drop falls into the water, initially it forms a crater, then a crown, and finally a pillar. The second drop must be timed in such a way that it lands on the pillar. At the moment of collision, different shapes are formed, for example, mushrooms, hats, or flying discs. When I increase the distance between the first and the second drop, the shape turns into a flying disc. When I make the distance smaller, the shape resembles something like a hat.
You must be very quick to take a shot at the right moment.
It's impossible to be that quick. Normally, I thicken my water with some transparent substance like guar gum to make the shapes hold longer before they collapse. The liquid should have the consistency of milk or cream.
And the last question. Some people say that quality water drop pictures are only possible when you use an automatic timing device. Do you agree?
I wouldn't say so. I know many people using highly specialized gear who still produce photos below standard. Gadgets won't do the trick. The genre I have chosen requires mainly one thing, a lot of patience. The shapes cannot be calculated. The only way to get the desired result is to adjust the settings and keep releasing the droplets until you get the perfect image. That usually means taking about 100 shots. But for me, that's the fun of it.